Welcome in to Vern's post-game show.
Massey not stopping at second and slides into third with a two-run triple.
Here's Josh Vernier.
3-1 the final score. Royals win. Royals start the road trip off right. Pickup win number 2 on the season. The win powered by pitching and defense. I don't know how many times. Look, I'm only hosting the post-game show for an 8th time this season. You throw in a handful of on-deck shows. Okay, maybe I haven't said it that much. I feel as if I've belabored this point already. The point being that the 2023 Royals, if this summer is going to be entertaining, if they're going to be a competitive ball club, they need to be led by their offense. They need to be led by big years from Bobby Witt and MJ Melendez, big seasons from Salvador Perez and Vinny Pasquantino, and then you're going to need a few other surprises in that lineup. That's been my belief and remains my belief. Is the strength of this team, the stars of this roster reside in that lineup? Those are the men that are going to lead the Royals to, hopefully, a competitive May and June and July and so forth. And yet, the win today really wasn't about the offense. It was pitching, defense, and your stars coming through in big moments. Now, wherever you want to start, I think you got to start with Brad Keller. Keller goes out there and gives you 5 2/3 innings of one-run baseball. And I'll be honest, guys, I tell you that I'm being honest, but maybe there's not enough proof for you. But as Paul Hoover made his way to the mound there in the bottom of the 6th inning with the Royals in front, 2-1, Brad Keller at just 94 pitches, he just sat down the Giants' number 3 hitter, got him swinging at a curveball in the dirt for his 3rd strikeout of the day. When Paul Hoover made his way to the mound to pull Brad Keller out of this game, I'm thinking, oof, I don't know. I think I'm going to let Keller ride it through the 6th inning. Let him finish off this frame and put together a quality start. But Paul Hoover and this coaching staff, they go to the bullpen. You got a lefty in Jock Peterson coming to the plate, another left-hander on deck in Yastrzemski. Okay, I understand the thinking. It's smart thinking. Play the percentages, play the odds, go lefty on lefty. You know they're not going to pull Jock Peterson. I shouldn't be surprised, and with maybe my old school mentality of letting the starter finish off that frame, I do need to evolve because, yes, by the book, what Tampa and Kevin Cash would have been doing for the past 5, 6, 7 years is pulling Brad Keller there in the 6th inning, and it worked out beautifully. Very nicely done by Ryan Yarbrough to get out of that 6th inning, to go through the 7th inning, needing just 13 pitches and retiring the side in order. Chapman and Barlow close it down in the 8th and 9th innings, respectively. So we got to begin with pitching, but I'm going to move off of that quickly because the defense today. Salvador Perez in the 9th inning alone, stealing a few strikes. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Paul Hoover's main agenda or main focus this spring. Well, I'm sure it was to introduce himself to everyone and build relationships with everyone, sure. But his goal was to improve the catching on this team. MJ Melendez, Salvador Perez, and whoever else is in line. To turn them into better receivers, better framers behind the dish. Salvi stole a pair of strikes there in the 9th inning. Salvi helped Ryan Yarbrough get out of a jam there in the 6th inning with those cat-like reflexes as he pounces on a perfectly dropped bunt from Yastrzemski. Salvi making that play in front of the plate that you and I have been watching him perform perfectly for more than a decade now. Salvi got it done offensively with his first home run of the season. Got it done defensively. Kyle Isbell getting another hit. Kyle Isbell making another sensational play in center field. Matt Duffy making a nice diving stop to his left. Man, I could go all night long talking about this. Maybe it's because we haven't had many afternoons or evenings together where we're celebrating. We can celebrate tonight. Royals win 3-1. They pick up win number 2 and now hand it off to Brady Singer. How nice is that? How nice is it that Brady Singer is your starter and we're not begging him to stop the bleeding? Brady has a chance to help form what is called a winning streak. Singer, Sean Manaea tomorrow, 3:05 for the first pitch. I'll be on the air with the On Deck Show beginning at 2 o'clock. Phone lines are open for you, 913-586-7610. That's 913-586-7610. Vinny Pasquantino reaches base 3 times today, gives the Royals what turns out to be the game-winning run with that leadoff home run in the 4th inning. The 8th pitch of the at-bat, he gets underneath a 2-2 splitter, lifts it over the right field wall for his first big fly of 2023. Vinny, now through 8 games this season, 5 hits, 5 walks, 4 strikeouts. He's the only Royal with more walks than strikeouts. I'm not saying that all is fixed, and here we go, here come the Kansas City Royals. I'm not even saying this was a perfect game. I don't know what the heck MJ Melendez was thinking there in the 8th inning. I don't know what he's doing on the base pass. You know, and look, my conversation earlier this afternoon with J.J. Piccolo, what you heard from Matt Cotrero earlier today, even Paul Hoover on the pregame show with Ryan Lefevre, everyone has acknowledged the mental mistakes, the preparation mistakes, the what I'm hoping are uncharacteristic mental blunders by this young Royals core over the first week plus of the season, but it did rear its ugly head again today. Guys trying to do just a little bit too much. Instead of a solo home run for Salvador Perez there in the 8th, if MJ makes the smart decision, that's a 2-run bomb, and instead of a 2-run lead in the 9th inning being handed off to Scott Barlow, maybe he has a little bit more breathing room, and you're not sitting on the edge of your seat like you certainly were. With runners on the corners and 2 outs in the bottom of the 9th inning, Salvador Perez and Scott Barlow finish off the 27th out, getting Sable staring at a curveball down and out of the zone. Again, Salvi stealing a pair of strikes there in the 9th inning. And the Royals steal a win in the opener on the home opener for the San Francisco Giants. More than 40,000 people in attendance to watch your boys in blue pick up the dub. I want to talk about it with you. 913-586-7610. You can enjoy this, right? You know, this isn't mid-July, 20 games below 500, and the bozo on the radio is going nuts about a random 3-1 win on a Friday afternoon. We're only 8 games into this season. All cannot be lost yet. You have to be able to enjoy a win like this. And personally, what allows me to enjoy it even more is you're not putting Brady Singer in that binding situation once again of, we've lost 4 in a row. The rotation has not given us enough innings. The bullpen is depleted. The offense is punchless. Brady, you're our only hope. No, your bullpen is more than rested. Vinny's feeling good. The last time Bobby Witt Jr. played a full game, he hit his first home run. He had a multi-hit game. MJ Melendez reached base. MJ Melendez doesn't punch out in his 4 trips to the plate. I would think that your core 4 hitters are feeling pretty good going into tomorrow afternoon's tilt against a lefty in Sean Manaea. So phone lines are open for you, 913-586-7610. The text line is there as well, 913-586-7610. Quick timeout. We'll head inside that Royals clubhouse and hear from you after this.
Burns Post Game Show on your home for Royals baseball, 610 Sports Radio, and the Odyssey app.
Another 2-2 is hit high and deep to right field. Down the line, and that ball is gone. It's a home run. A long home run over the right field fence, and Vinny Pasquantino has his first homer of the year, and the Royals lead it 2-1.
They go on to win 3-1. Steve Stewart on the call as heard here on 610 Sports Radio. Big fly number one for the Pasquatch. That doesn't sound... I like the gimmick. I don't like saying that, though. Vinny Pasquantino, eighth pitch of the at-bat as... How about Alex Cobb? Now, you know what? I'm not going to give him too much praise. This Royals offense hasn't... Alex Cobb, seven innings of two-run baseball. I did not see that coming. Glad to see Vinny get underneath that splitter that was a bit up. I think Cobb wanted that bad boy down and out of the zone. Instead, it's knee-high, staying in the zone, maybe a little bit above the knees. Salvi lifts it over the right field wall. The eighth pitch of the at-bat fouled five balls off before depositing that one to give the Royals a 2-1 lead there in the top of the fourth inning. Salvi would go bridge in the eighth. That's how we get our 3-1 Royals victory. Phone lines are open for you, 913-586-7610. Two more in San Francisco, and then three in Arlington. It'll be Brady Singer tomorrow, Chris Bubich coming up on Sunday. The first run for the Royals came in the second inning, gave them an early but short-lived 1-0 lead. Keller would give it right back in the bottom half of the second. But Kyle Isbell, a one-out opposite field single. If you end up seeing a highlight package of this game, that single from Kyle Isbell in the second inning, that is his off-season work. Keeping the bat in the zone longer, becoming a better up-the-middle opposite field hitter on display there. So a one-out opposite field single from Kyle Isbell is followed by another opposite field single. This one from Hunter Dozier, your boy, coming through with an oppo knock. So you got first and third with one out, and Nicky Lopez sneaks one by a pulled in Giants infield to give the Royals again a 1-0 lead. So nice to see the opposite field approach from Hunter Dozier and Kyle Isbell. It's always nice to see an opposite field approach from anyone, especially two bats that have, I think it's fair to say, disappointed over the past two and a half seasons. So a nice day all around for Kyle Isbell. I mentioned the diving catch that he made in the eighth inning. But that was the third out of the eighth inning. He doesn't make that catch, even if he's able to knock it down. Now, if you missed it, it's a man on first with two outs. The Giants' number three hitter's at the dish. He hits a hard line drive to right center field. Kyle Isbell coming in, dives, makes the catch. Even if he misses that and knocks it down, it's now first and third with two outs and Jock Peterson coming in to face Aroldis Chapman. And you know the kind of cheese that Aroldis Chapman is bringing, and you know Jock Peterson's always looking to go deep. That is a very combustible mix, those two squaring off. So a big spot there by Kyle Isbell, making the diving catch and helping us all avoid that Chapman-Peterson matchup in a two-run game in the bottom of the eighth inning. So Isbell, Dozier, you got love for Vinny Pasquantino, but after the game, as he's talking with Joel Goldberg, all he's talking about is the pitching.
Yeah, the theme of this team right now has been how well our pitching staff has been going. And, you know, today we were only able to put up three runs, but they kept them to one, and then they gave us a chance to win, and we were able to do it. So, you know, if they keep doing that, like, we just got to be a little bit better, and we'll win some ball games. So for us, it's just kind of keep pushing. Hopefully the pitching staff keep doing it because it's really fun to watch.
Again, that's Vinny Pasquantino on Bally Sports Kansas City on the field after the game with Joel Goldberg. Vinny on base three times, is the only Royal to have multiple hits. Although, nice to see for the second time this season, I believe, in both of their wins. That is correct. Yeah, in both wins, eight of the nine starters pick up a base knock. Everybody today, outside of Jackie Bradley Jr., you go back to the Royals' last win, which came on Monday. Eight of the nine starters with a hit, everybody except Nate Eaton. Eaton getting a much-needed day off. Bobby Witt Jr., for the most part, getting a much-needed day off. He comes in, a pinch hit for Michael Massey in the eighth inning. I really don't even want to talk about or really give too much detail, dive too deep into the MJ Melendez base running gaffe there. Yeah, you know what? The way this season has started, there's been so many mental mistakes, uncharacteristic, head-scratching plays. I hope we don't have more to come. I shudder to think that we will. So when the next one arrives in a loss, we'll tackle it. But for now, MJ, we'll focus on that base hit. How about that? Way to go, MJ. 913-586-7610 is our phone number. That's 913-586-7610. That's also the text line number, the Jay Southland Tow Service text line. Special shout out to our friends at Jay Southland Tow Service for presenting my post-game game notes. The only other thing I got jotted down that we have not addressed yet, Scott Barlow. Leadoff triple in a two-run game at the bottom of the ninth inning. He gives up a leadoff triple to the aforementioned Jock Peterson. And, look, I'm not going to sit here and say I don't get nervous. Of course I get nervous when there's runners on the corners and the game-winning run coming to the plate like Scott Barlow faced tonight. Of course I get nervous. But I know Barlow isn't nervous. And that makes me sit a little easier. Of course, I've seen Barlow give it up. I remember Shohei Ohtani destroying one off of him last year in Anaheim. Yeah, I've seen Barlow blow a lead before. But it's not because the pressure got to him or he starts second-guessing himself or he's in his own head. Sometimes he just gets beat. Sometimes it's poor execution. It's not very often. You go check out the baseball reference page for evidence. But when he gives up that leadoff triple in the ninth inning, I don't think his heart rate really changes. He gets Yastrzemski to strike out looking at a curveball in the, well, not in the dirt, but down and out of the zone. Salvi helping him steal a strike there. Matt Duffy helps him out as he robs Estrada of a double down the line. Matt Duffy making a great diving snag on a 90-mile-per-hour line drive off of the bat of Estrada. Barlow then walks Brandon Crawford, setting the stage, first and third, two outs. He strikes Sable out on another curveball down and out of the zone that the combo of Barlow and Salvi steal the strike, and the Royals win 3-1. So Keller, Brad Keller picks up the win. He's now 1-1 on the season. How good are those breaking balls looking, ladies and gentlemen? You saw plenty of curveballs. That's the, I don't want to say new pitch because he's thrown a curveball before, but the curveball has come back from the dead, right? Interesting time to bring that up, but yeah, it's resurrected. The curveball is resurrected here in 2023. You dive into his performance today. Keller, 5 2/3, one run on three hits, three punch outs, three walks, 94 pitches. He only got seven swings and misses, but five of them came on that curveball. As a matter of fact, 35% of the time he threw that curveball, he's either getting a called strike or a swing and a miss. So they're either staring at it or swinging through it. Same numbers really bear out when it comes to the other breaking ball is a tighter slider. So the breaking ball looking pretty strong today from Brad Keller. The emotions of Scott Barlow, the opposite field attack from Kyle Isbell and Hunter Dozier. And then, of course, your stars being stars. Vinny going bridge in the fourth inning. Salvi connecting on his first of the season and number 224 of his Royals Hall of Fame career. Maybe baseball Hall of Fame career. Number 224 for Salvi. Only Alex Gordon has more interleague base hits in Royals history than the great number 13. Salvi, by the way, with a hit in six of the seven games that he's appeared in this season. Royals win their second game here in contest number 8. Phone lines are open. Text line is there as well. Let's take a look at the text line, the Rally Mantis writing in, happy about Big Brad Keller. Yeah, we're all hoping for two in a row, Rally Mantis. I'm with you on that one. Joey in Grain Valley cheering on Brad Keller, giving a tip of the cap to the offense. Yeah, you know, the questions, the need, the request, the desire that we had for more offense coming into today, I think that still remains. Three runs on nine hits. Sure, everyone contributed, but at a grand total of two extra base hits. Yeah, just the home run from Vinny and the bomb from Salvi. So you still need to see more. Now you keep in mind Bobby Witt Jr. was not in the lineup today. A win's a win. Today's win was paced by pitching and defense, and I certainly expect if more wins are going to come down the pike, the wins are going to come courtesy of the offense. So what we saw briefly yesterday in the eighth inning, that three-run eighth inning, that was the only reason I had any positive morale coming into today, was rewarded. And I think we can keep that slight positive morale we had about the offense coming out of the eighth inning yesterday. But in no way is anything fixed. Am I sitting comfortably with the offense? No. No, the request remains the same. I need more from MJ. I need more from Bobby. Salvi and Vinny starting to look like the guys that we've become accustomed to. Now, Massey, Isbell, keep it up. Liked what I've seen from the both of them of late. Back to the text line, 913-586-7610. Scott in Phoenix writes in, Vern, that clip of Ned Yost you played during the pregame was spot on. So my question is our talent level a 2-6 baseball team, or are we better than that? Yeah, that's a good question. If you missed what Ned Yost had to say, if you missed that highlight from his press conference that I played on the On Deck show, it's an interesting question, Scott. I'm gonna play it for the people. I want to get your response. Yeah, stick with us. I'll bring you that highlight from Ned Yost coming up in a moment. Royals win 3-1. Quick timeout. The postgame show rolls on after this.
Burns postgame show on your home for Royals baseball, 610 Sports Radio, and the Odyssey app. Welcome back to Vern's postgame show on your home for Royals baseball in Kansas City, 610 Sports Radio.
The 1-2 pitch.
In there, called strike three. Knee-high curveball, got Sable looking, and that's the ball game. The Royals beat the Giants 3-1 on opening day in San Francisco.
Jake Eisenberg on the call, as heard here on your home for Royals baseball, 610 Sports Radio. Royals win 3-1, taking game one of this three-game series against the Giants. They improve their record to 2-6. Really enjoyed listening to Jake. First road game, first time I've really been able to dial into the radio broadcast. Thoroughly enjoyed not only him, but having a player perspective as well. Jeremy Guthrie, a natural. Really enjoyed the broadcast today. Royals win 3-1. Text line is open for you. The phone lines are there as well. 913-586-7610. Derek in Rayville writes in, Vern, the Royals played good in one of the toughest environments they'll play in all season. I'll take that moral victory. Well, it doesn't even need... I mean, it was a real victory. Yeah, I'll take the real victory and the moral victory, Derek. Sure, I'm with you. Dan and KCK shouting out Brad Keller, giving some love to Salvi and Vinny. Dan, always appreciate you listening. Appreciate hearing from Big T and Shawnee as he dials us up after a 3-1 Royals victory. Go ahead, Big T. I heard your passionate plea yesterday on the drive, man. It was wonderful.
Heck yeah, everybody is waving the white flag before Easter. Come on, we're better than that, Kansas City. We're getting spoiled by those Chiefs, and everybody wants that instant gratification. But let's talk about the boys in blue today, Vern. Way to go. Ruin the Giants' home opener. That's a tough place to play. And oh, by the way, I love that ballpark. Big baby Brad Keller, solid start by him. You're right about Barlow and Salvi in the ninth. It was a little nerve-wracking, but boy, that curveball is nasty. Chapman, Burn, woo! If we get any leads, it's not about how many runs you score, but if the Royals can get any kind of leads and offense rolling, this bullpen is going to be nasty in the back end. Way to go, Nicky Lopez, Mr. SNL, steady Nicky Lopez, played at got our first RBI going. Back-to-back-to-back got singles. That was nice to see, Vern. And you're right about that defense. It was pitching and defense today, and just enough offense. Duffy, great catch. Isabel, new papa. Isabel, way to go. Benny Boom Boom takes one out of the park. So does Captain Salvi. We got Brady, the Singer throwing machine going tomorrow. I feel really good about it, Vern. And I agree with you, Vern. I thoroughly enjoyed Jake Eisenberg and former Royal Jeremy Guthrie in the booth. And let's go out and get that victory roll, make it two in a row. And as always, let's go Royals. Jump aboard the train, everybody. Don't give up. Let's go Royals. Choo-choo! Choo-choo-choo!
It's just crazy the way that we speak on the 7th of April. Aroldis Chapman, velocity reached past 102 miles per hour twice. And this guy is not going to be a Royal for, two and a half, three more months? The better he performs, the quicker he's likely to be shown the door. Unless, hey, you never know. You never know. Maybe the Royals find themselves in the thick of it at the trade deadline. Even if they do, to be quite honest with you, I still think they end up moving Aroldis Chapman. But yeah, fun to watch. Fun to watch that radar gun with Aroldis Chapman out there. More love for the rotation coming in on the text line, understandably so. 8 games into the season, Royals starters have gone 42 2/3 innings. Okay, so that's it's not quite 6. That's plenty more than 5 innings on average. That's respectable. And their ERA, Royals starting pitching ERA, 3.16. I believe that's now top 5 in Major League Baseball. Not too shabby at all. Thanks for the phone call, Big T. 913-586-7610. That's 913-586-7610. From the text line, Vern. Has the pitching improved because of the new coaching staff? That's coming from the 816. Possibly. A little too early to tell, in my opinion. Because let's kind of break down who's performing well. Well, Zach Greinke, okay. Zach Greinke's great, in my opinion, regardless the coach. He's great because he is great. Okay. Jordan Lyles. The guy was drafted, 15 years ago? I think he is what he is for the most part. 9 strikeouts yesterday, not a single walk. Maybe. We'll see. Let's, when a guy is a veteran, he can certainly be helped by coaching. But 2 starts into the season, it's not enough for me to make any sort of evaluation of what Jordan Lyles is now. Now, Brad Keller, okay, you want to talk about his the resurrection of his curveball, the newly implemented sweeper now being a 5-pitch guy out there? Maybe that has to do with coaching. Or maybe it has to do with the fact that he's going to be a free agent in about 5 months. So the better he performs right now, the more money he's going to make. Or to quote the late, great Therese Paylor, the contract year is undefeated. Now, I'll say this about the coaching staff and the effect they've had on this pitching staff. I think they've bolstered the confidence of these young men. They have empowered these young men more so than the previous regime did. Previous regime says, all right, here's what we want you to do. Here's the game plan. Here's where you're going to pitch this guy. Here's where you're going to pitch this guy. And when a Keller or a Bubich or a Lynch says, well, you know what? I kind of feel more comfortable doing this or doing that. At times, players felt as if their thoughts were falling on deaf ears. But now, when they present to Brian Sweeney or Zach Bove or Mitch Stetter or Matt Cotrero or Paul Hoover, when they say, hey, you know what, I'm actually more comfortable doing this and doing that against this guy, looking this location, going for this location against this portion of the lineup. Their message is being received by the coaching staff, implemented, if agreed with. And that reception to their ideas, their willingness to work to make a pitcher comfortable, obviously bolsters these young men's confidence out there on the mound. And I think most people can understand that in whatever profession you find yourself in. You know, when your ideas are valued, when your opinions are heard and implemented, you're going to work a little bit harder. You're going to feel better about what you're doing. You're not going to be afraid to make a mistake because you know this guy's got your back. He supports you, and he's doing everything that he can to get the best out of you. So confidence-wise and tangible-wise, I do think this coaching staff could help this pitching staff quite a bit. You know, Chris Bubich's slider, I think a lot of it just comes down to confidence. Just comes down to a hearty pat on the back from the coaching staff, and we believe in that pitch. Throw it. Do it. I don't know if he was always receiving that message under the previous regime. But eight games into the season, who knows? You know, Chris Bubich ends the year full of confidence, but a 5 ERA, yeah, whatever, who cares? Glad you feel good about yourself, but results are all that matters. So just as you can't truly judge a team until you get to, what, the middle of May, it's really hard to dive into, especially pitching performances, until we're 2+ months into the season. I mean, we're getting close to the All-Star break before we can go, okay, this is a much different pitcher. Not only in what they're throwing, but in the results. Well, maybe sooner. Maybe you want to say the middle of May. I'll kind of lean towards late May, early June, in my opinion. Text line 69306, the Jay Southland Tow Service text line. All right, to go back to what Scott in Phoenix was alluding to, the Ned Yost cut that I played earlier today on the On Deck Show. I made mention of it because since Ned said this about 2 years or 2 months ago, it has been bouncing around in my head nonstop. All throughout spring training, this is all I was thinking. Early on this year, there's not a day that goes by, there's not a game that goes by that I don't hear Ned Yost say this in my head at some point.
Sports fans, baseball fans particularly, they just want you to win. And that's it. They want you to win. Well, the problem that you run into and that we ran into kind of in 10 and 11 and started to come out of it in 12 and 17 and 18 and 19 is you're not going to win without talent. I mean, that's just the way that it is. You can fight and put up a good fight and you can, you know, you can say the right things, but unless you have talent, you're not going to be able to compete. And in 10 and 11, we were developing that talent at the minor league level. We had all those kids, Haas and Moose and Salvi and Herrera and all those kids coming up through the minor league. So we were just waiting for them to get there. In 17, 18, and 19, we were amassing our talent again, restocking, if you will, our talent again, to get to the point where they are today, where they, you know, can start to take steps forward. But, you know, in 13, 14, 15, 16, and even into 17, we were a talented team. And it showed. I mean, we were 52 games over 500 during that period, won two American League championships and a world championship. So it was an exciting time. It was a time that we knew we were good. We knew we had talent. We knew we could compete. And that makes it fun. That makes it fun. You wake up every day excited and raring to come to the ballpark and put on a show for your fans.
Okay, so Scott in Phoenix heard that and asks, after hearing that, what do you think of the talent? Are the Royals Do they have talent that is reflected in their record? Are they a 2-6 team? And Scott, I know I have slow played this and taken a very long time to answer your question. But I'm sorry, I don't know. I mean, initially, my first response would be, no, they don't have enough talent to compete. Yes, they are a squad likely heading towards, you know, 70 wins on the season. But that's why I think the organization, and I'm not saying you need to accept it, right? You want ownership to go spend more money, bring in better pitchers this offseason, bring in a bat so you can compete for the division. Good. That's how you should feel as a fan. You should demand more from ownership. You did it in the past. You saw how the Chiefs responded. Clark Hunt said, all right, Andy Reid, I'm not letting you leave. You're going to be my next head coach. Clark Hunt took control of that bad boy, and it's been all sunshines and rainbows ever since. So I understand if you're demanding more and you don't want to hear about the evaluation season of 2023, I respect you saying that. You should not embrace. I'm yet to embrace an evaluation season. But that point that Ned Yost is making is exactly why this ownership. And this guy is not going to be a Royal for, you know, what, 2.5, 3 more months? The better he performs, the quicker he's likely to be shown the door. Unless, hey, you never know. You never know. Maybe the Royals find themselves in the thick of it at the trade deadline. Even if they do, to be quite honest with you, I still think they end up moving Aroldis Chapman. But yeah, fun to watch. Fun to watch that radar gun with Aroldis Chapman out there. More love for the rotation coming in on the text line, understandably so. 8 games into the season, Royals starters have gone 42 2/3 innings. Okay, so that's, you know, it's not quite 6. That's plenty more than 5 innings on average. That's respectable. And their ERA, Royals starting pitching ERA, 3.16. I believe that's now top 5 in Major League Baseball. Not too shabby at all. Thanks for the phone call, Big T. 913-586-7610. That's 913-586-7610. From the text line, Vern, has the pitching improved because of the new coaching staff? That's coming from the 816. Possibly. A little too early to tell, in my opinion. Because let's kind of break down who's performing well. Well, Zach Greinke, okay. Zach Greinke's great, in my opinion, regardless the coach. He's great because he is great. Okay. Jordan Lyles, the guy was drafted, what, 15 years ago? I think he is what he is for the most part. 9 strikeouts yesterday, not a single walk. Maybe we'll see. Let's you know, when a guy is a veteran, he can certainly be helped by coaching. But 2 starts into the season, it's not enough for me to make any sort of evaluation of what Jordan Lyles is now. Now Brad Keller, okay, you want to talk about his the resurrection of his curveball. The newly implemented sweeper now being a 5-pitch guy out there. Maybe that has to do with coaching. Or maybe it has to do with the fact that he's going to be a free agent in about 5 months. So the better he performs right now, the more money he's going to make. Or to quote the late, great Therese Paylor, the contract year is undefeated. Now I'll say this about the coaching staff and the effect they've had on this pitching staff. I think they've bolstered the confidence of these young men. They have empowered these young men more so than the previous regime did. Previous regime says, all right, here's what we want you to do. Here's the game plan. Here's where you're going to pitch this guy. Here's where you're going to pitch this guy. And when a Keller or a Bubich or a Lynch says, well, you know what, I kind of feel more comfortable doing this or doing that. At times, players felt as if their thoughts were falling on deaf ears. But now, when they present to Brian Sweeney or Zach Bove or Mitch Stetter or Matt Cotrero or Paul Hoover, when they say, hey, you know what, I'm actually more comfortable doing this and doing that against this guy, looking this location, going for this location against this portion of the lineup. Their message is being received by the coaching staff, implemented, if agreed with. And that reception to their ideas, their willingness to work to make a pitcher comfortable, obviously bolsters these young men's confidence out there on the mound. And I think most people can understand that in whatever profession you find yourself in. You know, when your ideas are valued, when your opinions are heard and implemented, you're going to work a little bit harder. You're going to feel better about what you're doing. You're not going to be afraid to make a mistake because you know this guy's got your back. He supports you, and he's doing everything that he can to get the best out of you. So confidence-wise and tangible-wise, I do think this coaching staff could help this pitching staff quite a bit. You know, Chris Bubich's slider, I think a lot of it just comes down to confidence. Just comes down to a hearty pat on the back from the coaching staff, and we believe in that pitch. Throw it. Do it. I don't know if he was always receiving that message under the previous regime. But 8 games into the season, who knows? You know, Chris Bubich ends the year full of confidence, but a 5 ERA, yeah, whatever, who cares? Glad you feel good about yourself, but results are all that matters. So just as you can't truly judge a team until you get to, what, the middle of May, it's really hard to dive into, especially pitching performances, until we're 2+ months into the season. I mean, we're getting close to the All-Star break before we can go, okay, this is a much different pitcher. Not only in what they're throwing, but in the results. Well, maybe sooner. Maybe you want to say the middle of May. I'll kind of lean towards late May, early June, in my opinion. Text line 69306, the Jay Southland Tow Service text line. All right, to go back to what Scott in Phoenix was alluding to, the Ned Yost cut that I played earlier today on the On Deck Show. I made mention of it because since Ned said this about 2 years or 2 months ago, it has been bouncing around in my head nonstop. All throughout spring training, this is all I was thinking. Early on this year, there's not a day that goes by, there's not a game that goes by that I don't hear Ned Yost say this in my head at some point.
Sports fans, baseball fans particularly, they just want you to win. And that's it. They want you to win. Well, the problem that you run into and that we ran into kind of in 10 and 11 and started to come out of it in 12 and 17 and 18 and 19 is you're not going to win without talent. I mean, that's just the way that it is. You can fight and put up a good fight and you can – you know, you can say the right things, but unless you have talent, you're not going to be able to compete. And in 10 and 11, we were developing that talent at the minor league level. We had all those kids, Haas and Moose and Salvi and Herrera and all those kids coming up through the minor league. So we were just waiting for them to get there. In 17, 18, and 19, we were amassing our talent again, restocking, if you will, our talent again, to get to the point where they are today, where they, you know, can start to take steps forward. But, you know, in 13, 14, 15, 16, and even into 17, we were a talented team and it showed. I mean, we were 52 games over 500 during that period, won 2 American League championships and a world championship. So it was an exciting time. It was a time that we knew we were good. We knew we had talent. We knew we could compete. And that makes it fun. That makes it fun. You wake up every day excited and raring to come to the ballpark and put on a show for your fans.
Okay, so Scott in Phoenix heard that and asks, after hearing that, what do you think of the talent? Are the Royals, do they have talent that is reflected in their record? Are they a 2-6 team? And Scott, I know I have slow played this and taken a very long time to answer your question. But I'm sorry, I don't know. I mean, initially, my first response would be, no, they don't have enough talent to compete. Yes, they are a squad likely heading towards, you know, 70 wins on the season. But that's why I think the organization, and I'm not saying you need to accept it, right? You want ownership to go spend more money, bring in better pitchers this offseason, bring in a bat so you can compete for the division. Good. That's how you should feel as a fan. You should demand more from ownership. You did it in the past. You saw how the Chiefs responded. Clark Hunt said, all right, Andy Reid, I'm not letting you leave. You're going to be my next head coach. Clark Hunt took control of that bad boy, and it's been all sunshines and rainbows ever since. So I understand if you're demanding more and you don't want to hear about the evaluation season of 2023, I respect you saying that. You should not embrace, I'm yet to embrace, an evaluation season. But that point that Ned Yost is making is exactly why this ownership and front office is treating 2023 as an evaluation campaign. Because they might have just as much young talent as those teams did in 2010, 2011, and 2012. They might. Right? If Drew Waters turns out to be the guy that some have told me, this guy's going to get an $100 million contract sometime down the line. If he becomes that player, if Nick Prado lives up to a first-round draft pick selection to go along with guys that I believe are well above average ball players in Melendez and Pasquantino and Bobby Witt Jr. and Salvador Perez and maybe even a Michael Massey. Well, yeah, that's 6, 7, 8 deep in the lineup. Yeah, that team is talented. But I don't know for sure. Who's had a good year in the big leagues? A good full year in the big leagues? Salvi. And that's it. No, Bobby had a solid, a very good rookie campaign. Okay, so you know what? Salvi and Bobby have had good, full big league seasons. On the back of their baseball card, they've done it. But that's it. I mean, even Brady Singer missed the first month, right? Last year, didn't break camp in the rotation. Okay, you want to put Scott Barlow, Zach Greinke in there, of course, but you understand my point. That's why this front office and organization is treating 2023 as an evaluation season. And I look, for as much as I'm unwilling to embrace it this early in the season, if I'm JJ Piccolo, I'm likely doing the same thing. Because I know ownership isn't likely to open up the checkbook in a big way on a continuous basis. So when I first asked for that big payday in free agency, I better be right. Because the previous guy spent a bunch of money on Carlos Santana and obviously paid a lot of money to Salvador Perez, brought in Michael A. Taylor. Paid Mike Minor, right? Paid Andrew Benintendi. That didn't work out. So when you decide to make that Edinson Volquez, Kendrys Morales type of signing, when you prepare to make that James Shields, Ben Zobrist, Johnny Cueto type of trade, you better have the talent that can ultimately win. So I'd love to be able to give you an answer of, is this team more talented than their record would indicate? I'd love to say yes, but it would be based in hope. I refuse to say that that they're not a talented team. I can't say that they're not. I've just watched them play too often. MJ, Vinny, Isbell, Massey, I've seen them too much to say, no, these guys can't get it done, but I'm also results-based. You haven't done it yet, haven't turned it into enough wins just yet. So a long way to say, I don't know, Scott. I'm not sure right now. I believe that they can be better than their record, but a lot of things need to go right. A lot of gigantic question marks, as Jay Binkley would say, those question marks need to turn into exclamation points. Let me run through a few more of these text messages. 913-586-7610, text line pointing out they also paid Ian Kennedy. They also paid Alex Gordon. I understand that. None of those really worked out. From the 918, come on, Vern, making the playoffs once every 10 to 12 years is unacceptable. No doubt. Yeah, I don't know what I said to the contrary, but I agree with that. Listen, I'm not telling you to accept anything. You should be frustrated. But if you want to tune out, I understand, but I'm in it. I'm following them. I'm rooting for them. I'm hoping that they're building it right. I'm hoping that they got enough kindling around these embers of Salvi and Bobby, of Vinny and MJ. Hoping they find a spark somewhere. Hoping this campfire can keep people interested throughout the summer. From the 316, Vern, I just wanted to know who you trust second most in the bullpen. I'm just scared of post Aroldis Chapman Royals bullpen. Meaning when they trade him? Well, yeah, you should. Look, but if you're a team that's trading assets away, you're more than likely not on the cusp of the postseason. So after they trade Aroldis Chapman, who's going to be my second most reliable reliever? I don't know. That's still 2.5-3 months away. But if I had to give you a power ranking of relievers right now, of course, Scott Barlow's at the top. Aroldis Chapman would be number two. Who would be number three? Taylor Clark, Jose Kwas. Yeah, I'll go Taylor Clark. I liked what I saw from him at the beginning and then at the tail end of last season. Jose Kwas, Jose Kwas has been impressive this season as well, but I'll still give the slight edge because of what he did last year to Taylor Clark. Appreciate it. Royals win 3-1. They improve their record to 2-6, and now get set to face an old friend. You know, talking about trades, Sean Manaea squares off in Game 2 of this 3-game series against the Giants coming up tomorrow. Sean Manaea for the Giants, Brady Singer for the good guys. It's a 3:05 first pitch. I'll be on the air with the On Deck Show beginning at 2 o'clock. Royals fans, stay there. More Royals discussion and a lot of draft talk. A lot of Chiefs draft talk as we are, less than 3 weeks away? Jay Binkley, Chris Unocero, they have you covered from here. Stay right there. Royals baseball. Royals win 3-1. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Vern's postgame show.
Diving is MJ Melendez. Did he make that catch? He did!
Check out the All Things Vern channel on 610sports.com and the Odyssey app to stay up to date with your boys in blue.
And a swing and a miss. He struck him out with a fastball. 7th strikeout for Daniel Lynch.
On your home of the Royals, 610 Sports Radio. We now take you back to regularly scheduled programming.